Have you ever felt that you are living a nightmare? That your lot in life was not how you would have written it? Have you ever felt miscast? Like you were meant to play a leading role in another movie? You see, the story of our life is one that we get to write. Early on in our lives, we have little creative license for where we are, who we are with, and the things that we go through. However, that changes as we go through life. When we get out on our own and start living our lives under the creative control of a new director, a new producer, us, our choices become the choices. But what happens is that the story of our lives has already been introduced, and there have been characters in place and trauma and drama already written. Now it's time to reconsider the story and to go back to the beginning if necessary with some creative focus and some great editing to get us ready for the bestseller called My Life. You see, this is our gift. This is our opportunity. Our lives are nothing more than a story within a story. History is for the world, but our story is played out before limited audiences. And today, the question for us to consider is, how is the story of My Life going? Is it time for a plot change? Is there some cleanup that needs to be done before we can continue? Is there a part two that you're just now considering even writing? Today, I want you to understand three things. Number one, that no matter what your story has been up until now, you can start over. Number two, I want you to know that your past performance does not guarantee future performance, or you are not a slave to what happened in the past. You can change that. You can draw a line in the sand. You can do the great up until now moment. You can reframe your past. You can reframe your words. You can reframe your attitude. You can change. And not only can you change, but you can change the title. You can change your life. You can change the trauma. You can change the drama. You can even change the ending. You have total creative control. And so thirdly, I want you today to consider that it's never too late. As long as you have breath in your lungs and a beat in your heart, as long as you have air to breathe and blood to pump, life to live, then you are still creating. And as human beings, our brains are hardwired for stories. Research has consistently shown that our brains are hardwired to process and retain stories more effectively than isolated facts or data. The motor and sensory cortices, as well as the frontal cortex, are all engaged during story creation and processing. These networks are nurtured and solidified by feelings of anticipation of the story's resolution involving the input of your brain's form of candy, which we call dopamine. It is written, Genesis 1:1, in the beginning, God created. I always tell people, stop right there, because our first introduction to God is as creator. And then drop down 25 verses, verses 26 through 27. Then God said, let us make man in our image after our likeness. So God created man in his own image. In the image of God, he created him. Male and female, he created them. See, our first introduction to God was as creator. And then 25 verses later, God says, hey, let us make man in our class, into our image. So we were made in the God class. We were made to create. Don't you hear it? And the story that we are creating about our lives is a story that we live out with our thoughts, with our beliefs, with our actions. Storytelling, motivating power of the warrior. See, I believe we are made in the God class. We're all imagers of God. And as his imagers, we have free will. We get to make our own decisions and understand that these decisions have consequences. Let us make man in our image. See, we were made to create. We are made to create our story. God gives us free will. He has a preferred will and he has a permissive will. Some of us are accepting God's low-hanging fruit. We're accepting, we're leaving a lot on the table. But what is our story? See, our story is part of his story, history. What is your story? Up until now, if there was a book with a title on it based on your story, what would it be? Would it be Ecclesiastes? Would it be Lamentations? Would it be Victim? How about Opinions and Feelings? What about Oops, I Did It Again? See, we are creating a story. Whether you choose to or not, you are creating. And since we're doing it anyways, why don't we do it with gusto, with passion, to win an Academy Award, to stand before the God of the universe someday and hear, well done, my good and faithful servant, because we are creating a story already. It's called our life. And when is the story told? Well, the story is usually told in the form of a eulogy. at the end of our life, we're lying in a box at the front of the room, and then people come around and tell us the story from their perspective. Tell us the story of what we did with our time. Tell us the story of what we did with our pain. Tell us the story of what we did with our resources, our time, our talents, and our trauma. Years ago, I wrote a poem called The Dash of Your Life, and it is about the story we write through the living of our lives. And it goes like this. I know of a man who stood to speak at a gathering of family and friends. He spoke of a friend no longer here, not long ago had been. In a box at the front of the room, his friend does lay his final bed. Tears flowing, speaking words of wisdom, and this is what he said. There's the date of our birth and the day that we die. In the space between, our dash of life does lie. The way that we live on this earth, this becomes our dash. When we live your life like it matters not the cars, the house, the cash. Think about that. Are there things you'd like to change? The time is now. You could be at the end or mid-dash range. You can't control the length of your dash. This is for God to divine. The width, intensity, this is yours. No butt prints in the sands of time. What will you do today? Every day is like a ticking clock. How did you spend your time before your time in the box? When your eulogy is written, life's actions rehashed, it's okay to be proud of things they say about how you spent your dash. You see, someday, someone is going to recount your story when you are somewhere else. So we want to write the best story possible. Write a story that captivates people, that motivates people, that's inspirational, that's educational, that's applicational. And if we're going to do that, we got to understand the vehicles that we occupy. Remember, we are a three-part being. We must deal with all three parts. I am a spirit. I live in a body. I possess a consciousness. This is true for every single human being. The real us is not that carbon-based life form that people see when they look at us. The real us is not the us that we see in the flesh form as we look in the mirror. The real us is spirit. Our body is our vehicle. It's our tabernacle. The Bible says it's our temporary dwelling place. The body is the medium, our vehicle, by which my spirit expresses itself, maneuvers this experience, and I possess a consciousness. Keep it simple, soldier, right? Plant life exists on a physical plane. Animal life exists on a physical and conscious plane. Human life exists on a physical, conscious, and spiritual plane. In the same degree by which the plant life is separated by the animal life by the inclusion of the consciousness, so man is separated from the animal life by the inclusion of the spirit aspect of our nature. Our body is a machine, like an automobile. You gotta water it. You gotta put oil in it. You gotta change the belts and the fluids. You gotta rotate the tires, right? The body is the same thing. It releases 63 known chemicals. It responds based on what we do with it. You must know that, warrior, because that's your vehicle. The brain, the mind, however, runs the machine. The battle is in the mind. Between the stimulus and response, there's a space, and in that space is our power. It is our freedom. The body has a lifespan, but our spirit doesn't. See, we are the spiritual creatures having a fleshly experience. The brain has unlimited plasticity. It never has to grow old. The spirit is eternal. And Abraham Maslow had a great chart called the Hierarchy of Needs. And he identified certain needs that every single human being has. These are not wants. These are needs. There's a big difference between want and need. We need air. We need food. We need safety. We need shelter. Those are needs. Those aren't wants. Those are needs. Now, you could want a nicer shelter. You could want more food or better food. So we got to realize I have certain physical needs. I have body drives, biological, physical needs. And Maslow's hierarchy of needs goes into those base needs. From the bottom up, he talks about physiological needs, food, shelter, safety, security. That's the bottom level of physiological. Right above that is safety. Then you have mental and social needs, sociological needs, psychological needs, love, security, need to be needed. Those are the middle two. And then as he goes up from that, there are other needs, esteem, self-actualization, spiritual needs. And we got to realize we all have needs at every different level of those physical needs, of the safety needs, of the social needs. There are needs within those needs. And some of the greatest needs we have are deep spiritual needs, our ability to connect beyond ourselves. There has to be something above man, especially if we're talking about self-actualization. And self-actualization is the top. It is us manifesting ourselves in the fullness of God's plan. understanding that we have a need for a meaningful relationship with something beyond ourselves. No man is complete without this relationship. And without this relationship, psychologists call this frustration. It is the basic elements that create the problem within us, the underlying sense that something is missing. And that's really what Way of Warrior is about filling in those gaps to realize something is missing, that we're called to more. We are the called out ones. We are warriors fighting the good fight. As I like to say, I am an arrow in the quiver of Yahweh. I am here to lighten people's burdens. This is why I do what I do. When I'm not in class, I get to work one-on-one with people. And for 32 years, this is what I've done. I get to do two things that I love, coaching and therapy. And people always ask me, what's the difference between therapy and coaching? See, therapy is one of the things I love the most. I love helping people who are struggling in their life. And sometimes in a single session, or maybe just a couple, I'm able to help them reframe their past to deal with a trauma, to put something in their rearview mirror for good. And if you want to read about that, go to wayofwarrior.training to connect with me. Whatever you're struggling with, I can help you. That's what I do. See, once we understand how we work, then we can work at a higher level. And as human beings, as social creatures, we communicate through stories, be it a work project, connecting with someone in a fitness class, whatever it is. We live in and through other people and their stories. I was reading an article, who's this by? I think it was from Neuro Leadership. It says at the 35,000 feet level, our brains like stories because clear narratives cut through distractions. Stories help us pay attention, particularly in this attention era when vying for people's focus is more coveted than ever. So when we see or hear a story, listen how your brain responds. The neurons in our brain fire in the same patterns as the speakers, a process known as neural coupling. Isn't that incredible? Neural coupling. You also hear it referred to as mirroring. We do that a lot in NLP. We match and we mirror. We pace and we lead. According to a highly cited work by Greg J. Stevens, Lauren J. Silbert, and Yuri Hassan, these processes occur across many different areas of the brain and can induce a shared contextual model of the situation. And what it does is it creates a connection in these networks. And these networks are nurtured, solidified by feelings of anticipation. And we actually start walking with people through what they're going on. And what happens is this activates our body and allows our brain to release something called dopamine. And the dopamine makes us feel good. And that's why when we experience an emotionally charged event or hear a story in the same nature, certain parts of our brain releases excess dopamine. It makes it easier to remember something with greater accuracy. If you're married, there's a good chance you remember the exact details, the weather, the lighting, the smells of your engagement decade later. It's dopamine. And this dopamine surge works well. We need it. We're addicted to it. And if you ever listen to TED Talks, you'll see there's a pattern for TED Talks, and they resonate in people years after. There's a pattern for those. And by the way, it's worth noting, neuroscientists are still debating findings about the brain. We're still learning more and more and more about the brain. Technology and science is allowing us to prove things we used to just say. We've said for 60 years, energy follows thought. Well, now we can actually follow an EEG and see how just creating having a thought actually creates photons, energy, that starts moving and changing. It's fascinating. We also know now that stories resonate at a business level, right? It's not just personal one. The Storyteller's Secret, I think Carmine Gallo wrote it. And she was interviewed, she interviewed many business leaders and talked about how storytelling can improve organizations. And she talked to Ben Horowitz, co-founder of large venture capital firm Andreessen Horowitz. And he told her the most underrated skill in business is storytelling. Richard Branson has said before that business people who cannot tell a story will never be successful. And think about how we are made. I don't know if you know this or not, but we have 78 organs in the body. The largest is the skin. Matter of fact, the 10 largest organs in the body, in this order, skin, liver, brain, lungs, heart, kidney, spleen, pancreas, thyroid, and joints. You know what the smallest is? The smallest is the pineal gland. It is the smallest organ in the human body. The pineal gland is located near the center of the brain. So all of our organs have a lifespan. They're only good for so long. So many beats of the heart, so many breaths in the lungs. But can I tell you, there's one organ that we have that is unlimited. The human brain. It actually has unlimited plasticity. See, we are under construction. We're working to be a little bit better today than yesterday, a little bit better tomorrow than today. It's Semper Gumby. always flexible. It's requisite variety. An element in a system with the most flexibility is the most power and control. And we got to understand, our brain has unlimited plasticity. It can stay as young as you want it. But we got to realize atrophy. If you don't use it, you will lose it. And our brain can be forever changing, unlimited plasticity. I turned 59 years old this year, and I feel like my brain is more nimble, more agile than it's ever been before. And so I got this great article from Paul Zak. And ready for the title? How Stories Change the Brain. It starts like this. It said, Ben's dying. That's what Ben's father says to the camera as we see Ben play in the background. Ben is 2 years old and doesn't know that a brain tumor will take his life in a matter of months. Ben's father tells us how difficult it is to be joyful around Ben because the father knows what's coming. But in the end, he resolves to find the strength to be genuinely happy for Ben's sake, right up to Ben's last breath. Everyone can relate to this story, right? An innocent treated unfairly, and a protector seeks to right the wrong, but can only do so by finding the courage to change himself and become a better person. Sound familiar? You should. A recent analysis identifies this as, quote, the hero's journey. It's a storyline. It's a foundation for more than half of the movies that come out of Hollywood and countless books. It's a majority of TED Talks. Why are we so attracted to stories? It's an important question. And Paul Zak says that his lab spent several years seeking to understand why stories can move us to tears, change our attitudes, opinions, behaviors, even inspire us. As a warrior, we want to know that. As a leader, our job is to motivate people. So why does the brain love stories? Well, it's how God made us. And Zak goes on to say, think about this as the car accident effect. You don't really want to see injured people, but you just have to sneak a peek as you drive by. Brain mechanisms engage, saying there might be something valuable to you to learn, since car accidents are rarely seen by most of us. That's why we rubberneck. See, what Zak discovered was that there are two key aspects to effective storytelling. First, it must capture, must hold our attention. And second thing an effective story does is it transports us into the character's world. In selling, we call that rapport. We meet people in their map of reality. See, that's what a story does. In a way, it builds instant rapport. It builds multidimensional rapport. What makes a story effective? Any Hollywood writer will tell you that attention is a scarce resource. That's why books and movies always have these things called hooks, right? Something to hook you, to get you going, to keep your attention. Scientists like attention, like an attention to a spotlight, right? So when you put a spotlight on something, we're only able to shine on a narrow area. Using one's attentional spotlight is a metabolically costly way, so we got to use it sparingly. This is why you can drive on the freeway and talk on the phone or listen to music all at the same time. Our attentional spotlight is dim, so we can absorb multiple informational streams at the same time because we're functioning at conscious and unconscious levels. And you can do this until the car in front of you jams on its brakes and your attentional spotlight illuminates fully for you to slam on your brakes. See, once a story has sustained our attention long enough, we may begin to emotionally resonate with the story's characters. But first, we got to grab the attention. That's why at wayofwarrior.training, I get you emotionally involved. I command your focus. I teach a state of focus that you won't find anywhere else. In 48 hours, you will swear that you've been with me for 2 weeks. I teach you how to steal time by being fully in the now moment. Go to wayofwarrior.training. See, once a story has sustained our attention long enough, and we begin to emotionally resonate with the story's characters, narratologists, isn't that credible? People that study narrative. It's all about the narrative. Narratologists call this transportation. And you experience this when your palms sweat as James Bond trades blows with a villain on top of a speeding train. Transportation is an amazing neural feat. We watch a flickering image that we know is fictional, but evolutionarily, old parts of our brain simulate the emotions we intuit James Bond must be feeling. And then we begin to feel those emotions. We call that empathy. And see, that's what stories do. Stories connect things. Stories bring brains together. Emotional simulation is a foundation for empathy, and it's particularly powerful for social creatures like us, like we human beings, because it allows us to rapidly forecast if people around us are angry or kind. It allows us to judge. Yep, that's what I said. And such a neural mechanism keeps us safe, but it also allows us to rapidly form relationships. See, oxytocin, it's a neurochemical responsible for empathy and narrative transportation. And Zach's lab pioneered the behavioral study of oxytocin and has proven that when the brain synthesizes oxytocin, people are more trustworthy, generous, charitable, compassionate. That's why Zach has actually dubbed oxytocin the moral molecule. See, our thoughts, our physiology, our brain, what we're thinking about, our breathing, our physiology, cause our body to release chemicals. The body releases 63 known chemicals, and those chemicals make us feel involved, make us feel bitter, make us feel happy, make us feel worthy, make us feel unrelenting, or they make us feel shameful, bitter, angry. This is what we've got to do. We've got to understand that this is the power that we have through storytelling, warriors, that we can actually create chemicals in a body that allow that person to do something they didn't think was possible, allows that person to do something they didn't think they should have done or could have done. We got to know how we work. Oxytocin makes us more sensitive to social cues around us. In many situations, social cues motivate us to engage, to help other people. When people watch Ben's story, Zach says, in the lab, they maintain attention to the story, and the story allows their body to release oxytocin. And here's what happens. Nearly all these individuals donate a portion of their earnings from the experiment, and they do this even though they're not told to. So how we learn through stories? We learn through stories because they keep our attention. And if they don't keep our attention, we're not learning from them. See, not all stories transport us into the character's world. Because if our job is to move people, and one of the greatest weapons in our arsenal to do that is storytelling, we need to know the way we tell a story, what is the outcome going to be? And this is evidence. This is science. We got to follow the science. The evidence supports the view of some narrative theorists that there's a universal story structure. These scholars claim every engaging story has this structure. It's called the dramatic arc. It starts with something new and surprising and increases tension with difficulties that the characters must overcome, often because of some failure or crisis in their past. And this leads to a climax where the characters must look deep inside themselves to overcome the looming crisis. And once this transformation occurs, the story resolves itself. What if that was your life? What if that was your story? What if you could take your story, no matter how good, no matter how bad, and put it in a compelling way that you can move people? And that's what I've been blessed to do. My childhood for 3 decades was a point of contention, caused me so much pain, so much abuse, so much, But today, me telling my story a different way, I impact strangers. See, stories connect us with strangers. Stories can motivate us, like the characters in them, to look inside ourselves and make changes to become better people. When we can lead with our pain and bring it to a great conclusion, it gives people hope. So go see a movie, laugh, cry. It's good for your brain and just might motivate you to make positive change in your life and the lives of others as well. As leaders, we are motivators. As warriors, we are showing the path forward, fighting the good fight. And as conduits, we live a significant life by being the pass-through agent for hope, encouragement, training, and other resources. Understanding the power of stories and how the brain processes stories is a priceless arrow in the quiver of a warrior. See, the art of telling a story is the gift of a leader. We have the ability to move people through the story we are living, creating, and getting others to believe in. Making people their creator, their Steven Spielberg. We got to be Steven Spielberg. We can go in the editing room and start editing some of our past to reframe it, to change the script. So how can your life be a better story? And this is what significance living is all about. Living our lives in a way that create a compelling story. So when telling a story, there's 3 components to keep in mind. Number 1, we want to pull people in. Number 2, be visual. A picture's worth 1,000 words. And number 3, generate insights. So let me break these down. Pull people in. You probably had an experience where you've attended a data-heavy presentation and found yourself nodding off within the first few minutes. The data is super important. Don't hear me wrong. But for most people, they need context. What does the data mean? Storytelling helps that. See, good storytelling falls within the prism of coherence, the structural integrity of ideas, wherein each added idea builds on and reinforces related concepts. We need coherence, and it helps us focus and cut through the noise. Second thing, we want to be visual. A picture's worth a thousand words. Our brains can process an image in as little as 13 milliseconds, which equates to a speed of 75 frames per second. That's why good stories show. Wearing her only pair of holeless pants, she sat down on a threadbare couch. Do you see how descriptive that is? Wearing her only pair of holeless pants, she sat down on a threaded couch. See, instead of tell, she's poor. Whether it's through words or actual visuals, stories set a rich scene. They help us process faster, become more engaged. That's also why incorporating visuals, arts, charts, when possible, into our storytelling will make our narrative stronger. And the last point we got to remember is we want to generate insights. The most remembered stories leave you understanding something more deeply than you did before. Research has found that organizations should design learning programs to maximize the insights that participants generate. Insights here is defined as the moment when an individual goes from no solution to solution. They go from, I don't understand this, to aha, I got it. It's called an epiphany. Boom. All of a sudden it hits you. In a work context, you can design employee meetings around story frameworks more than check-ins by asking more about solutions and less about problems. Having a two-way synchronous conversation increases reflection, raises a sense of primary relatedness in our brains, build connections, and ask questions. Pause. Get them emotionally involved. And there is science behind this. This is not just a feel-good. This is science. Follow the science. Research has consistently shown that our brains are hardwired to process and retain stories more effectively than isolated facts or data. Matter of fact, look at all these TED Talks. The biggest thing now, everyone's doing TED Talk. When you look at TED Talks, you'll notice that the best ones are made up of 70% stories and 30% facts. Stories build trust, and trust is what you need for people to remember the facts. Neuroscientist Yuri Hassan conducted a study at Princeton University that demonstrated how stories synchronize the brains of the storyteller and the listener. See, it builds a rapport. That's what I was talking about. This phenomenon, known as neural coupling, we brought it up earlier, allows the listener to experience the story as if they were living it themselves. See, you put them in second position. They actually start walking in the storyteller's shoes. They're feeling and understanding and seeing it from their perspective. This allows a listener to experience the story as if they were living it themselves. That is the definition of empathy. And more importantly, studies have revealed that stories engage multiple areas of the brains, including those responsible for processing emotions, sensory experiences, social cognition. They tap in the right side of the brain. This engagement facilitates better memory retention and a deeper understanding of the content being presented. Research conducted by cognitive psychologist Jerome Bruner suggests that people are 22 times more likely to remember information connected through a story than through facts alone. And as a creator, we are telling our story. We're creating it. We're living it. And it'll be a story that others want to follow. In transactional analysis, we call this life scripts. And Claude Steiner did a lot of work. This is very similar to Frame. And here's what Claude Steiner says about our life scripts. Listen, word for word. Quote, we create stories. Do you hear it? Storyteller. We create stories about our lives, what they have been and what they will be. This starts in childhood, where we weave our perceptions of ourselves and of the world around us into a narrative about what we can and will do. These life scripts then continue to have a deep and unconscious effect on how we live our lives. They affect the decisions we make. They control what we think we could easily do and could never do. They shape our self-image, and yet we seldom realize where they come from or even do not know they exist at all. Our life scripts are often encouraged and shaped by parents and other family members whose life scripts were shaped by their parents and so on in this way. We become a product of our family's history. Likewise, our scripts are also woven by cultural and natural forces. Life scripts are not all the same, as they may also be significantly affected by individual events, such as being criticized by a teacher or bullied by other children. They also are constrained by inherited characteristics. For example, it would be unusual, but not impossible, for a shorter person to include being a basketball player in their life script. There are often overall shapes to life scripts that can be expressed very simply. For example, I am a loser. Or I must save the world. See, life scripts can be very detailed and they can be very vague. They can be very empowering yet they can also severely limit our lives. So let me give you an example that Claude Steiner gives. A child brought up in poverty sees celebrities on television and hears her grandmother tell her that she can be like that and how there are people on TV screen who started with nothing just like her. So she consequently created fantasies and plays games of being a celebrity. Other children join in. But with her, it runs much deeper. She works hard and always volunteers, even after forgetting much of her conversations with her grandmother. She ends up working in television, not as a celebrity, but behind the scenes. While she feels good about being close to the stars, there's a strange sadness about her when she returns to her small apartment at night. She still works hard, and the deep belief that celebrity success will find her drives her on. See, the stories we tell ourselves, it's the narrative. Everything we do or do not do is driven by a belief system. And the belief system comes from our narratives. See, as human beings, we create stories to help make sense of the world. It's called logotherapy. And Dr. Alfred Adler says by the time a child is 5 years old, the majority of their map of reality is in place. These stories help create the map of reality. See, script messages are like this. They come from four things: modeling, attributions, suggestions, injunctions. We're all programmed. Every single one of us is working perfectly based on the story that we've been told. I'm not saying you're perfect. I'm saying you're getting exactly the results you've been programmed to get. So if you don't like the outcome of your life, change the story you're telling yourself. See, modeling is a visible way adults and peers behave, so we watch. Number two, attributions, being told you're just like that. Oh, you're just like your father. Oh, you're an alcoholic, Kim. Oh, you're a tramp like her. See, we're attributions. We're being connected to other people and all their negative, bitter traits we connect to ourselves. Suggestions, hints and encouragements such as always do your best. Don't let the world get you down. When you get knocked on your butt, don't stay down. Pick yourself up. Dust yourself off. Hit again. You're a loser. You'll always be a loser. Sometimes you just got to give in. And the last one's injunctions. Demands to do or not do things. Children are seen, not heard. Don't look at me that way. You ever raise your voice to me, I'll slap your face off so hard it'll be into tomorrow. Right? And there's all kinds of injunctions. You've heard this all growing up. And why does it matter? Because it's all programming. All the don'ts. Don't be this. Don't be close. Don't be separate from me. Don't be you. Don't be the sex you are. Don't be a child. Don't grow up. Don't succeed. Don't be important, right? How many could-haves, would-haves? Have you ever listened to yourself? Have you ever listened to your self-talk? I do. And a lot of times I keep to myself because I don't want to tell you what I'm hearing. Think about how we talk to ourselves. Matter of fact, I'm going to give you a job. Journal for the next 7 days. Just do a mind dump right before you go to bed. Whatever's in your head, write it down. Good, bad, right, wrong. Don't edit. Don't cross off. Don't think about it. Just write it down. And do the same thing in the morning. Whatever it is. Could be a page. Could be 5 pages. Do that for 7 days, morning and night. Take a week off and then go back and read it. Take a look at what you're saying to yourself. How many could-haves, would-haves, should-haves did you make today? How many if-onlys, part of your inner vocabulary? How many times have you replayed or you had a conversation, a situation that pained you? Or how many times you worried about things that never took place? How many scenarios have you created the unpredictable future? How much of speculation taken out of your day? How passive is your mind? How honest are you with yourself? Are you at a cross purpose with yourself? Going through the motions but not really committing to the goals? Saying one thing but being another? How about your thinking? Do you have cognitive distortions? How distorted is your thinking? Are you forming a personal identity around a disease? Do you speak about your arthritis, your multiple sclerosis? Are you an alcoholic? Are you an addict? Are you hopeless? What are you attaching to your identity? Those are stories. Those are narratives. And we follow the storyline. We believe the story. What do we believe? What we tell ourselves over and over and over and over. If of those questions I asked, if any of those are yes, just one of them, you need to recreate. You need to go back and change the story you're telling yourself. We need to go back and reframe. You need to go to wayofwarrior.training and take a look at going into my 2.5-day intensive so we can take a look at the structure of your beliefs. Because I'm going to suggest that you created beliefs when you were a lot younger based on some trauma, based on some drama. That's not who you are today. You're not that little kid. You're not that teenage girl. You're not that young adult. That was 20 years ago. That was 30 years ago. That was 40 years ago. It's time to rewrite the story. It's time to write a better story. It's time to take a look at all the pain and be happy for it, because pain creates a chasm for joy to fill up. It's about writing a different story. See, stories, they constrain, they create limits on us, or they create unlimited possibilities. See, parents can give a counter injunction. Parents and leaders, warriors, we can speak life into people. We can give counter injunctions. We can give permission that allow and actually may replace the don'ts with the do's. The greatest power of understanding life scripts and that we have the ability to create is in the ability this gives us to change. You have within your control the power to be whoever, whatever you want to be. You've just got to believe it and act as if and start creating a story around it. Go through that word. Greater is he who is in me than he who is in the world. In my weakness, his strength is perfected. I must decrease so he can increase. For I know the plans I have for you, declares the Lord. Plans to prosper you, not to harm you. Plans for hope and a future. For you are God's masterpiece, created new in Christ Jesus, created in advance for good works for you to walk through. It's time to get in the editing room. It's time to become the Steven Spielberg of our lives. It's time to rewrite our life script or to make it better. It's time to take action, discover our life script, and constantly get in the writer's seat. It's time to listen to ourselves. What are the stories we are telling ourselves about our life? When do we say, that's not me, or I couldn't do that? What are the patterns that we seek and avoid? What excuses are we making for not doing things? As we consider all these things, consider how we could change them. Consider rewriting your life script and change your life forever for the better. See, you are the creator of your story. Yes, it's scary. Yes, it's exciting. What's stopping you? Your current life script. So scratch that CD, break that LP, pull on that 8-track. Our beliefs, our self-talk, our constant narrative, the programming of the reticular activating system are all ways we create our story and we recreate our story. Sometimes the story that's being told is not one we chose. Well, the time is now to be Steven Spielberg and go back to the editing room. Leave some clips on the cutting room floor to reframe, to recreate a new storyline, a new origin. Remember Albert Einstein, that smart guy? He defined insanity as doing the same thing over and over and expecting a different outcome. So in a good story, you begin with the end in mind and you work yourself backwards to the now. So let me tell you a story about change, about becoming more than you thought possible through your own choices and your own actions. This woman was in a china shop, and she was admiring the beautiful china. And her eyes locked on this beautiful teacup. And she stared at the teacup. It was like a Disney movie where it came to life, that little spring. And all of a sudden, the teacup was animated. And the woman said, the teacup, I've never seen such a beautiful cup. You are so beautiful. And the cup responded, thank you. But it said, I wasn't always this way. It went on to say, my first recollection was I was just this lump of clay sitting on a shelf in the potter's house. And all of a sudden I saw these two large hands of the potter come at me, and he put me off the shelf and he put me onto the potter's table. He started pulling and twisting and shaping. I didn't like it. It was uncomfortable. I said, stop. He said, I'm not done yet. As he continued to pull and shape and form. And after a little while, he stopped. It was confusing. I didn't know what was going on, but it would be good to be left alone. And I was contemplating what he did. He came at me with something in his hands, and he picked me up, and he threw me in a fire. And it was so hot. And I'm like, what? What did I do wrong? Why don't you like me? Let me out of here. And calmly he said, not yet. I'm not finished. And after a while, he took me out of the fire, and he put me back on the potter's table. And it made no sense what had just happened. And as I'm contemplating this, he comes at me with something in his hands. And he's got this brush in one hand, this other thing in his other hand that he's dipping the brush in. And he starts putting the stuff on me. And it's sticky and it's gooey. I don't like it. I said, stop. He says, not yet. As he puts stroke and stroke and stroke onto me. And I kept telling him to stop. I said, not yet. Not yet. I'm not finished yet. After a while, he stopped, and it felt good to be left alone. But then he came at me again, and he put me in another fire. I swear this was twice as hot, and I was crying out, what did I do? I was just sitting here. Why don't you like me? Let me out. Leave me alone. This is not fair. And after a while, he pulled me out of the fire, and he put me back on the potter's table. And it made no sense. What did I do wrong? What was all that about? And after a while, he came at me again with something in his hands, and he picked me back up. But this time, he took me back to the beginning. He put me back up in the corner shelf. And as I sat there in the corner shelf, I'm contemplating, what was that all about? What caused him to do what he did to me? What did I do wrong?
Does he not like me? As I'm contemplating all these questions, he comes at me again with something in his hand, and he puts it right in front of me. It was a mirror. He wanted to show me just how beautiful he had made me. We go through traumas and dramas in this life. Life is an undulating line. It has peaks and valleys, has highs and lows. And Romans 8:28 says, God causes all things to work for the good, for those who love him, who are called according to his purpose. And we're working to be under construction. When we're working to be a little bit better today than yesterday, a little bit better tomorrow than today, when we're working to reach our potential, then we understand all the unfairness, all the harshness, all the things that should have never happened to us in life are great ways, tools to shape us, to form us into the leader that God's called us to be. Today, I told you, I wanted to leave you with three things. I want you to understand that no matter what your story has been up until now, you can always start over. Secondly, I want you to know that your past performance does not guarantee future performance, that you can change. You can change the title. You can change the drama. You can change your name. You can change your hair color. You can change your life. You have full creative control. And lastly, today I wanted you to consider that it's never too late. As long as you have breath in your lungs and blood in your heart to be pumped, you have a life to live. Then you are still creating. Thank you so much for joining me today. Please like this show and subscribe to get more great content like this. Also, I'd love to hear from you, so please leave me a review. If you would like more information or you would like to connect with me, please visit wayofwarrior.training. That's wayofwarrior.training. Until next time, remember, when you live your life like it matters, it does. It's the way of warrior.